We're talking today with Rod Mozell, president of the Oklahoma Farm Bureau. Rod, just this last November, you had the opportunity to be reelected for another two-year term as Farm Bureau president. This is your second reelection, is that right?
Second reelection, the start of my third term. So we're in Oklahoma Farm Bureau, we're the only state in the South that has term limits. So the most that a president could serve is 4 two-year terms, and I'm starting my third two-year term. So we'll see what the future holds.
Why were you interested when you first ran, and obviously then have rerun a couple of times now?
Well, I've been involved in Farm Bureau, you know, as a member and as some industry committee work and so forth, going back 35, 40 years, I guess. But I first got involved and got talked into running for the board back when Farm Bureau was facing some real serious financial challenges, and I'd been blessed to have some good business experiences, and some folks were trying to encourage me to get involved, probably more from helping with the problems we faced on the insurance side at that side. And mm-hmm. so that's why I got talked into running for the board. And then a few years later, we had a little bit of another round of some serious challenges, and that's when I got talked into running for presidency. And it's been an absolute joy. The people you get to work with are our Farm Bureau members, and just the people you work with in agriculture are just such great folks. It's been a real, there's challenges and some frustrations from time to time, but all in all, it's been an absolutely joyful experience for the folks you get to work with.
2021, full of challenges as far as agriculture is concerned, and, you know, a general farm organization like Farm Bureau kind of touches most of those challenges.
It has been. The last 2 years, I mean, what's normal? None of us know what normal is anymore. It's been, we always expect change, but it's been such interesting challenges the last 2 years that most of us have never faced before. And so it doesn't matter what commodity you're doing or whatever, we've all had to be figuring out how to weave our way through all this. And overall, I think agriculture has done a tremendous job of, you know, keeping production coming and continuing to feed the folks of our country and many of the folks around the world. And so agriculture has been one of the best performers through all this chaos, but it's certainly made for lots of interesting speed bumps and ripples in the road, as no matter what commodity you're growing. Right. So
now, you know, when you think about some of the specifics, there's been a couple of issues kind of they've risen to the top at least our state level that have really taken a lot of your attention. One is this medical marijuana issue.
Medical marijuana is one that, you know, came to us after the voters passed an initiative petition. Farm Bureau had been in active opposition to that petition, but the voters indicated that they wanted to make medical marijuana legal, and that's the way the question was written. That's led to a pretty rapid expansion of that industry, and lots of anytime something happens in a hurry, a lot of times there's a lot of bumps and a lot of concerns, and you find out some things that probably need to be adjusted. And so that's, everybody's been rippling, you know, trying to figure out how to deal with that, whether it's legislators or local officials or supply industries. I mean, it's had lots of impacts across all of those. And supply and demand eventually works. I think we're starting to see that happening now in medical marijuana, that supply and demand is kind of working to get that back in sync. But it takes a while whenever something happens so suddenly.
I guess what, you know, during your annual convention, during the policy making sessions, you did come up with some marching orders as you deal with the legislature come February.
We did. We you know, it had a little bit of medical marijuana policy from the last convention, but we added a lot more policy. I bet you, I hadn't sat down to add up, but I bet you a fourth of our resolutions this year probably had some impact from medical marijuana. So we added a lot of clarification, a lot of new things, where the everything from favoring some increases in licensing fees to more transparency about what's being produced and where it's being produced and who's producing it, so that contacts can be made to concern about spray drift and concern about utilities and basic services and how we all interact. So we dramatically expanded our medical marijuana policies that are in the book that our board and our public policy team will use when they're working with the legislature.
when we think about maybe the other M, there's several M's, I guess, out there that we were talking about in the fall coming into the annual meeting and that you've had to deal with, and the state continues to have a lot of conversations regarding McGirt. And this affects, obviously, most directly everything east of Interstate 35 in the state of Oklahoma. That has to be or worrisome, again, for the footprint that you have in your organization.
That's been a huge concern of our members, and so much of this one is the unknowns, the uncertainty. The basic McGirt ruling that the Supreme Court did affected just major crimes. But there's lots of concerns and there's lots of issues rippling through the tax commission and through local municipalities and so forth about what additional tax and civil impacts and rules and regulatory impacts that decision can have in other areas outside of major crime. And the not knowing that creates lots of uncertainty for our farmers and ranchers and just property owners through the land that folks has not been reservation land all these years, and suddenly now is overlaid with a footprint of a reservation. And we've tried to have good relationships with our tribal leaders. We've all been fellow citizens of Oklahoma. They've done lots of good things for our state. And so, but there is big concern about where this can go and how it could affect whether everybody's paying taxation to support our roads and highways and local governments and schools, whether there will be two folks we have to get permission from on environmental issues and other rules and regulatory issues, whether we have to deal with a state and a tribe and all those kinds of ripples. And so we got lots of things to work with. We did just file an amicus with the latest Supreme Court ruling, and we expect to hear in January whether the Supreme Court's going to hear that case or not.
Some of your traditional agriculture, most certainly the beef cattle industry, is had quite a ride over this pandemic, and we're still seeing that, not just from 2020, but into 2021 as well, and the need to try to somehow match up the need for additional meat processing capacity, especially the local regional level. Farm Bureau's been right in the middle of a lot of those discussions.
And I would say that was probably the issue we heard the most from our members about, especially in the first half of the year, from January up through April or May. That was by far the dominant issue we were getting calls from members about when we were out across the state visiting. The issue hasn't gone away, but it's calmed down dramatically as prices have come up in the beef market and so forth. It's reduced some of the talking pressure on that. But we're still concerned about the underlying issues there and what we can do to make sure those are lively markets where there's real competition and farmers have multiple choices of, you know, when they come to market or harvest their animals. And so we were excited that Governor Stitt used part of his money from the CARES Act to incentivize expansion of some of our existing small meat packers and to help start some new ones. And we're excited to see where that's going to go. And we're excited to see kind of the birth of the farmer to consumer direct market. I mean, that's still the local packing and the farmer to consumer is a pretty small part of the market overall, but it still helps give some other choices, some other markets, maybe some value added markets for some of our farmers that they can increase their yields and have some additional opportunities. So we're anxious to see that keep growing. As the state with the number two beef cattle population, it's very, you know, it's a lot of concern that we don't have much of that value added. Most of that goes across the lines to Texas or Kansas. And so we participated in some studies looking at the feasibility of, you know, even putting a big new meat, a huge new meat packer in. But that's a tough hill to climb at, right? You know, $500 million to $1 billion to do that. And most of those, when you go to look them at, if it's not till the second or third owner that buys it out of the second or third bankruptcy that they get the numbers down to where they can make it work. So that's probably, I know there's some people looking at some medium-sized packers, which would be good, and we're trying to do everything we can to encourage that kind of development.
Right. For the you know, going kind of back to that medical marijuana conversation for your crop producers and even ranchers that are trying to maybe spray fields and there's a lot of those kind of unknowns because of the spray drift issues and the liability issues and aerial applicators scared basically of the liability issues. I know that's been a big part of the conversation you've had with a lot of your crop producers over this last, especially eight or 9 months or so.
And it's not a new issue. Over the years, I remember those issues with cotton farmers, and we've had those issues with grape vineyards. And when we had the big expansion of grape vineyards some years back, there was all the same kind of concern. Actually, the law and the EPA stuff is very clear that farmers have to watch drift off their land. And so all of us try to be responsible and watch what the wind levels are and responsible what products we're using and how close to our neighbors. A lot of times it's a matter of communicating with our neighbors to work it out. This is a concern with cannabis since it's a very sensitive crop. And so some of the applicators have gone to great extremes of setting limits that the law doesn't even require, but that they're setting to trying to protect themselves from any liability. I honestly have not, as much talk as there's been about this, I honestly have not heard of a single actual case this year of the drift being a problem. I think everybody's been very sensitive and very careful, and so there's been lots of talk about it, but I really haven't seen any real actual incidents that I'm aware of.
Right. As we started talking about all these things going on at the start of this interview, even before we got the recorder turned on, we talked a little bit about supply chain. And it seems like this has really reared its ugly head in the last, 3 months, 4 months or so. And I guess it's going to continue to be a major, major thing to focus on in 2022.
It is. And certainly I'm in the greenhouse business. In the greenhouse business, if I go to order 3 gallon or 5 gallon pots right now, if I didn't already have them booked, it's like a year's lead time out. If I go to put up a new greenhouse now, it's, you know, things are stretched out to 6 and 8 months on a lot of things. And then it's even little bitty items like bamboo stakes is an item that that we bring in from China. And 15, 16 months ago, it was $4,000 for the freight for container from China. For a smaller outfit bringing something like that in from China, now it's over $20,000 for that same container. The stakes inside haven't really changed. They're still $11,000 or $12,000 for container load. But the freight to get it here has gone up 5 or 6 times. And so, you know, you get to worrying, well, what can I do instead of using a wooden bamboo stake from Tonkin, China? So, and so there's every industry, it seems like, whether it's the auto industry, or yesterday I went to Sonic around the corner to get lunch, and I thought, well, with my cheeseburger, I'll get some onion rings. And I ordered onion rings, and they said, well, they couldn't get onions right then through the supply chain. So I made my Idaho friends happy with French fries instead of onion rings, because there was some supply problem on onions this week. So
amazing. Let's talk about what you're thinking is going to really be priority for Farm Bureau in 2022.
Well, we're actually, we tried to come back into full action as far as our in-person activities for the latter half of this of 2021. 2022, we're actually going to tackle a lot of new projects besides all the traditional things. We announced at the state convention we're starting an internship program in Washington, D.C. For young people that are interested in public policy that are attending OSU and the College of Agriculture and Natural Sciences. And I'm supposed to say the Ferguson College of Agriculture now. I've got to get used to that. But that was a change in 2021. We've been working with our congressional delegation, and they're each going to, as we expand the number we can do, they're all have expressed willingness to host an intern from out of the Agriculture Committee on the congressional staffs and the Senate staffs. And so we're going to be increasing the funding to, it's so expensive for young people to go to Washington, D.C. and get lodging. Mm-hmm. We're doing going to be sponsoring some internships to help pay for those lodging expenses and all. Then another thing with young people we're launching this year is a youth legislature. The first one's going to be July 12th and 13th. Going to be in the state capitol chambers of the State House and State Senate for rural kids from 4-H'ers and FFAers from across the state. It's going to be about two-thirds FFA and one-third 4-H, but we're really excited 4-H and FFA are working together to do that. It's going to be juniors and seniors, and they're going to get to sit as state senators and state representatives, actually pass some laws. Depending on schedules, they'll get to meet with the governor and the lieutenant governor and the speaker and the pro tem and so forth as they act as legislators for 2 days. So that's a couple exciting new programs with young people. Then we've been really excited about our YF&R program. Gets young folks involved in agriculture up to 35, more involved in developing leadership and meeting one another and networking. We're going to start a new program this year called The Bridge, Generation Bridge. It's going to be aimed at folks from 35 to 50 to keep that same kind of activity for that next age group, as to keep developing their leadership skills and working with one another. So we're excited about that program that I guess we're just going to be the second state in the country following your beloved Kentucky has started that program. So we're going to follow in their footsteps on that. And then one of our biggest projects this year, we've just brought Megan Fanning aboard, who's got several years of banking experience. We're going to be starting Oklahoma Agriculture and Rural Investment Fund. And so we're in the midst of trying to raise $10 million that will then start doing loans to small businesses, trying to figure out a way to stop the drain folks from rural to urban. We're going to try to help make deals more bankable, mm-hmm. to fill that gap of new startups that have a good new idea in the agriculture, the value added, the manufacturing type things to help start new businesses across rural Oklahoma. So we're really excited about that and delighted to have the cooperation of the Farm Credit System and Bank First and helping get this up and going, and excited about what this can do for the future of our state.
When you think about the overall mission of Farm Bureau, you're really trying to represent and be a mouthpiece in a you know, society that's getting more and more urban all the time. We saw further evidence of that in this latest set of census numbers, the redrawn congressional districts and the like. This is always an ongoing challenge.
It is. Our state had two-thirds of our counties had a drop in population, and yet our state grew dramatically in population. Had a very nice growth rate compared to a lot of other states. But we're very concerned about this. It's not just a new problem. It's gone on for a number of decades or several generations now, the movement from rural to urban. And so we think there's tremendous opportunities. And COVID showed that a lot of people want to return to their roots or get more space around them. And so we think there's a real opportunity to start growing rural Oklahoma again if we can keep working on everything from broadband to healthcare to figuring out some of these real economic gaps. People talk about food deserts in areas and cities. We have some real capital or finance gaps in rural Oklahoma, and so that's why we're trying to do some of these things to try to fill some of those gaps and try to keep some of our best and brightest back in rural Oklahoma and staying on the farm or staying in their small communities.
You mentioned rural broadband. That's one of the keys, isn't it?
It is, and there's the Trump administration put a lot of money into rural broadband. The Biden administration and the new infrastructure bill are going to put a lot more money into broadband. We're reaching a point once these funds get out there to help that the cost is going to start being really huge per hookup for the ones that are left. And so there's a lot of look at other technologies we can use to do that last mile or mm-hmm. last 2 miles to figure out that we get some way of coverage to everyone. But it may not all be fiber broadband, but there's a lot of work and going to be some experimenting with other systems, whether it's the off of the satellites, Starlink or whatever it's called, or other systems to do the last stretch. But there's real efforts underway to get speedy internet out to everyone.